We're up to 12 people signed up.
All right, I'd like to reconvene, please, and Lou, would you bring your tape forward? And we'll hear that, and then we'll go on to the next speaker.
One fucking left and right, why get fucking serious about life and fucking get someone opposite sex? Fucking, I hate queer bastards bending over in front of their buddies in front of the mirror, slapping their dick, doing their ass cheeks, fucking prick. Fuckers should be shot, they're afraid you fuckers walk around the street, you guys are fucking dead, get it? Got it? Got it?
Hi, yeah, this is Brent Johnson from Churchill, I'm from 2206. I just wonder kind of benefits this clubhouse, you know, like what happened to the hospital? I know, you know, good therapy sessions, you know, orgies, there's some cool stuff for free. They have to pay, they call it fees. And I don't know about, if we keep career movies. You know, I mean, make movies and stuff, but it really says all my folks, so. But this is a serious party too. I have two dads, they're both gay. I'm half sheep, but that don't matter. My first three numbers are 241, what is yours? What a fucking fag.
Hi.
Hi, Lou, I really want to join your buttfuckers club, so call me, 241-2142. Hi there, take your fucking homo fag over there, and I'd like to fucking kick your ass, you fucking fag.
I'm fat, kid, you motherfucker!
Those poor fuckers, that's it, made me laugh, it's good. Hey, Lou, you fucking queer bastard, throw this shit on campus here. Fucking gay fucking bastards, butt flap your buddies all over the place, the fuck is all shit? Hey, you fucking gay bastard, come, fucking, hopefully, click my ass, where's butt flap his buddies there? Free butt session, you fucking queer son of a bitch, that should be shot. Look at the boobs, too.
I think you got the hint. I've got 30 minutes. On it, oh, just a little over 30 minutes of this continuously, and like I said, it went on from October through November of last year, and then again, in April, it came up again. And so far, I've left my name out of our ads this year for, as a contact person for our student group, because I'm tired of coming home to this. The only thing that made me feel safe, that my first name is Lou, and they thought they were talking to a guy, so they didn't know who I was. But I didn't realize that at first, and coming home at night, believe me, I looked over my shoulder a lot. And knowing that I was followed from time to time across the river from Moorhead into Fargo, I still look behind me when I drive, when I do public speaking over in Moorhead, I make darn sure nobody's following me back over. But obviously, I made a mistake last spring because my car window was shot out. Thank you.
Any questions?
It's a very sobering experience to listen to that. I'm, to some extent, glad that we knew what we were going to hear. I can imagine what it would be like to come home late at night, flip on your answering machine, and get these kinds of things. I'm only sorry that some of the people who have testified to us and probably have spoken to you that don't believe that there is harassment or discrimination or violence against gay and lesbian people, I think it would be helpful for them to hear that. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry you're the one who had to hear it, though.
It's very painful to listen to, even several steps removed as we are. Can't imagine how much pain it must have been for you. It would also seem to me to be evidence, though, of the kind of hate crimes that Minnesota has laws to protect people from this kind of harassment. I'm not an attorney, but it would seem to me to be pretty hard to refute. You have names and telephone numbers.
I did contact the phone company, and the only way that they were willing to put some type of a tracer on was by if I knew exactly the time that these phone conversations were coming in so that they could pick up the exact time and not accuse anybody else. At the time, I was working 12-hour days. I wasn't home a lot. You know, I depended on my answering machine to pick up any messages I had, so I had no way of pinpointing it down. I simply played the tape over and over and over to various classes and groups that I spoke to until someone finally came forward and so said, Lou, I know who those voices were. They were the same group of people who harassed me last year. And so we took it to the student affairs office at NDSU, and we were fairly sure who some of the people were on the tape, and we brought the names forward, and the student affairs office did confront these individuals.
With what consequences?
Well, since we had absolutely no assurance for sure who they were directly confronted and said, we have reason to believe that it was your voice on this tape. We have had positive identification from one person who claims that you did the same thing to her a year ago, but there was no absolute proof. If we would have had absolute proof, the university wanted to take action of getting these people some type of counseling or help as a direction of some type of disciplinary action. That was one thing that was recommended. Mm-hmm. And I believe from NDSU Student Affairs Office, they've been very cooperative with us, that if such thing will happen and they do or are able to get positive IDs of people, they will recommend that these people receive counseling for their homophobia.
Just one brief comment. It seems to me that that sort of response, while it is helpful, falls far short in terms of what MSU could do, which is to make a clear kind of pronouncement at the level of the Board of Trustees or the President's office that such behavior is not to be tolerated on that campus. There have been other institutions that have done that, and it is amazing how quickly that sort of thing disappears. That might be something that the 10% Society would want to present to the President or the Board of Trustees.
We are presently, there is a task force presently at North Dakota State University trying to incorporate such statements within their civil rights to include sexual orientation as protected. I believe that that is already in the books and on the laws over at Morehead State University, and I have many members from the 10% Society who said they feel safer being over at Morehead State than they do over at NDSU. But yet, many of the laws need to be challenged to find out just how safe we really are.
Now, what I was suggesting does not require change in law. Mm-hmm. It requires courageous leadership on the part of a president that will not tolerate that thing on his or her campus.
Thank you.
All right, the next person is Janelle Jacobson.
My name is Janelle Jacobson, and that's spelled J-A-C-O-B-S-O-N, and I'm here speaking as a counselor in private practice in Moorhead. I'm going to be informal in my testimony today, but I want to start my remarks by saying that, as you all know and have heard repeatedly, the problem is rooted in internalized homophobia and heterosexism. The fear of homosexuality and ignorance that surrounds that, combined with the idea that it's a privilege, or that heterosexuals are a privileged group, I believe is the root of the problem. Heterosexism, as if that is the only way that is okay to be, should be, and therefore nothing else is okay, needs to be changed and challenged. My concern is that who's going to do this? And that's why I think it falls under the responsibility of government, because somehow they need to find a way, based on our Constitution, to implement something that's right. Because the fear permeates every institution in our culture. And I think local governments, when things fall to local governments, the pressure mounts on such a daily basis, from who you see at coffee at the local coffee shop, how are you going to get reelected, will I be replaced as a superintendent of schools? All kinds of things happen on a local level, including pressures from your church or your minister. And I don't need to elaborate on that, but I think that the looking at who is going to be instrumental in making and bringing about the changes that are needed, I look to government at a state level and hopefully at a federal level to start the process, because somehow if somebody someplace else makes something sanction, then local governments and educational institutions and so forth can say, I didn't choose this, this is coming down, even if they were supportive. It's a very, very complex problem, but somebody has to say it needs to be done because it's right. So I want to start from that premise. When I think about being a counselor in a community as rural as it is out here, I think of families first, and I think of families as being a part of society. And as Connie so eloquently stated earlier, she had internalized all the same prejudice that everyone else in a community had, because that's the way we all are. We're just a part of the society, so we're going to take it all on. So what happens then to children who are born of parents who have all this same internalized homophobia and attitudes regarding heterosexuality? The children grow up in a non-supportive environment, the opposite to what all mental health professionals would say is important for children to have. And even educators would say, we need to help be supportive of families, because what happens at home implements or impacts what happens in the schools. So it's a kind of a chain reaction. When I think about statistics, and I didn't bring them because I would guess that you have access to large amounts of statistics and documentation by considerable research to support my statements. Suicide among children and adolescents that are homosexual children is by far higher. These are facts that are supported and documented, and it's not taken seriously. No one seems to take it on as something we need to do something about. So I'm looking at who can make a difference. I also see a lot of adults that worry about even at age 40, being rejected by their parents. Because it is a fear that is so internalized that love for family and even protection of family keeps somebody from becoming who they are and claiming themselves. And when I counsel people, I see people from what I would say mild to severe emotional problems around sexuality issues. And I think that it is something that is, it's you're asking, as a professional, I'm asking people to be braver than any other heterosexual in the whole country. Because they have to rise above insurmountable odds and somehow claim themselves and be who they are. And we find that, at least I do, find that just being a white female and a heterosexual one at that, you know, I find life difficult. You add all these other factors on, it's no wonder that suicide's rate is higher, that emotional problems are greater, and that it's much harder to find self-esteem and worth. And so it's just, it's just a real big problem. So society needs to change to help parents be able to love their children. I subscribe to a magazine that comes to me on a quarterly basis, and in that I remember reading an article that a parent wrote that said, oh, I vision and dream about the day when all the parents of gays and lesbians all across the country will hit the streets and say, you can't do this to my kids anymore. I mean, parents that stare awake at night at their ceiling cracks wondering how society can change. So I don't know that we can ask parents to do it, because they haven't been given the message from any institution that says they ought to stand by their kids. And I see this as a real social problem. So I could elaborate, but time is limited. So I will say, I really expect federal and state and local governments to pass laws to protect sexual minorities, and that includes those who have issues around gender. I don't think that we can limit and be narrow-minded about even what's included in difficulties around sexual issues. And all minorities have a right to be protected and understood. And I would ask that government use their clout to influence changes in all public sectors, and especially in education. And I support changes in curriculum and textbooks. And as a woman who was very knowledgeable about changes that occurred in the early 70s, there were large studies done on sexist issues with regard to curriculum. And I would support that same kind of vigorous research to be done here, because it's right. That's the only reason that's going to make sense, I think, is because it's right. Because all the moral arguments are going to get us nowhere. It's just because it's right. I support inclusion of role models. And the people who are in educational systems need to be able to be comfortable presenting those role models. So therefore, I support required, extension of education to be required of would-be teachers and also continuing ed, because somehow, this has got to turn around. Now, my professional organization happens to require me to advocate for that which is right, that all people get equal services. And I happen to take the ethical standards of my my professional organization seriously, and so I have no qualms about testifying on issues that I feel that statements need to be made on. But not everybody feels that way. Not everybody's going to take a stand, even if their professional organization says that that's what they ought to do. So I would say that educators need to be required to get steeped in education regarding sexual minorities and how to present things that are uncomfortable for them. And I also, because I know this is true and yet it falls outside of the public sector, churches are one of the main places that people turn to when they're hurting. And it's one of the most hurtful institutions in our country. And I don't know that I need to elaborate on all the ways that is true. For prior to opening a private practice in counseling, I was an AIDS coordinator for about 19 months through four public health agencies. And so I am very aware of all the difficulties that churches have in dealing with issues around sexuality. And somehow AIDS made it possible for them to talk about this. And so I think some organizations, I'm going to Kennedy, Minnesota in a couple of weeks, and I'm not getting any money to go. I mean, I think that's a long way up there, at least that's what I was told. But I'm going because somebody heard me talk sometime, and they want half of my talk on homosexuality and half of it on AIDS. Because there is a yearning on the part of some sympathetic people that say, this needs to be done, we have a vehicle, we're going to do it, because we need to make this more comprehensive. So again, I say, I think government needs to take the lead, because it's right, and give sanction, and saying, this has to trickle down, use that theory, trickle down to systems that say, we have to follow, because somebody bigger than us said so. And I ask you to use your clout, because minority people don't have any power. It's too scary. I've heard many stories about how scared it is to try and be yourself when you don't even want to own it and claim it yourself. So I close on that note.
Thank you. Questions?
Do you have any questions?
I understand what you're saying about volunteering your time. Essentially, that's what all of us are doing too, because this task force has no budget and no staff. And we do not get reimbursed for anything or anything like that. So it's strictly volunteer. So I can appreciate your position going to Kennedy. And I'm really glad you're going to do that. Thank you. No questions.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mark Chekala.
My name is Mark Chekala, and I live at 427 South Elm Street in Moorhead. I'm a graduate of Concordia College here in Moorhead, and I am a professor of philosophy and chair of the philosophy department at Moorhead State University, and I'm also a co-advisor of the 10% Society at Moorhead State. I've been a Moorhead resident for 24 years of my life. As a faculty member at Moorhead State, I've been very pleased with developments in the state university system in terms of adopting a non-discrimination policy, and recently a memo circulated by our chancellor of the sort that Leo Treadway was talking about in terms of indicating to all employees in the state university system that harassment and discrimination will not be tolerated. And speaking before you, I want to speak not only for myself, but on behalf of many who really did want to testify at this hearing, but felt that they could not. One of those people is the woman who was assaulted and harassed in the incident that has been referred to. I will give you an article that I prepared about that incident, or an article that I wrote that was published about that incident, and I believe someone is coming from the social work department. I don't know, is Gary here yet? He said he would come between 3:30 and 4, and I think he'll say more about that too. In any case, in the spring, this woman was working on a paper for a social policy course in the social work department and on the military's policy concerning homosexuality, and she and the teacher of the course were harassed. The student was assaulted. And they ended up having to leave campus for their safety several weeks before the end of the quarter. I don't know that that has ever happened in the history of our institution, that there has been that kind of focused intimidation and focused threats against people so that for their safety they would have to leave. And I spoke with this woman earlier this week, and she said, you know, the perpetrator has still not been identified. I don't feel safe in speaking up at the hearing. She doesn't feel safe in generally being known. This is a person who now has to live in fear. Her life has dramatically changed because of the incident, and I think we need to work to change society so that sort of thing will not happen, and when it does happen, it will be dealt with strongly and quickly. No one should have to live with such fear. There are others who would have liked to testify here who are afraid that their employers might see them or a relative that they feel might not react very well to this. We know that discrimination does occur. We know that harassment does occur. In 1984, when I was speaking at a Duluth City Council meeting, when they were acting on whether to overturn Mayor Fito's veto of including sexual orientation in their human rights ordinance, I was told by people in the audience that I should be executed, including the main spokesperson for that was a minister who said that I and all gay people should be executed. I found that, I mean, even though I felt strong enough to not take that sort of thing seriously, it really does sort of change how you think about things, and it did change how I felt in walking from Duluth City Hall to my car. No one in our society should have to live with this sort of thing. I think that there are several things that we need. I think that we need specific protection, and some people have addressed this already. I think it's absolutely essential that sexual orientation be added to our list of protected classes in Minnesota human rights legislation. I think that very clearly gay and lesbian people are one of the primary targets of hate crimes, and in general in our society is still safe to harass and threaten gay and lesbian people. I think, and let me add to that, when we had our debate in Moorhead about our human rights ordinance a year ago, one of the main reasons cited by city council people, community people wanted it added, but the city council people vetoed that, and one of the main claims they made is that, well, we won't be in line with the state human rights legislation. In other words, I think there may be other reasons that they didn't express, but they said that they wanted to be in line with it, and so since the state law didn't include it, they felt that they shouldn't. At least that was an official reason. I think some people had other reasons that they weren't prepared to say publicly. We need education. There are people of goodwill who are trying to work for some change, but I think at this point, goodwill is not enough. We need very strong encouragement and maybe even making some sorts of things mandatory with regard to public education and public policy discussion. Many teachers in the state and many public officials in the state cannot say the word homosexuality without stuttering. If they have to, then they'll learn how to say it without stuttering. So we need protection, we need education. In addition, I think that we need change in Minnesota state law regarding certain sexual practices. Minnesota is one of, I believe, 13 states that still has identifies as crimes certain sexual activities, and I'm talking only of sexual things among consenting adults. That is, we're not talking about forced sexual activity or anything like that. I'm talking about the laws which are typically called sodomy laws. We're one of I believe, 13 states that still have such laws. Most people, I think, believe that such laws are outdated. Even people who themselves would not engage in such practices or even find them repulsive, I think many such people believe that it's a private matter and that the state has no business interfering in the private lives of individuals. These laws are not generally enforced, and I believe when they are enforced, it's usually not against heterosexual people, even though the state law does not indicate that only homosexual activities of that sort are illegal. When you have laws like this that are not generally enforced, and when they are enforced, are usually enforced against this particular minority group, I think what you have is law functioning as invective. I think it's Minnesota's way of saying, you lousy queers. And I think we better admit it, and I think we better work to change the laws. In addition, when you have laws like that that are not generally enforced, they can be used against people to, for example, fire them from a job, claiming that they're doing things that are against state law, which as the law stands now, they are, or not renting housing to them, and so on. So we need changes in those laws. The third thing I want to talk about is domestic partnership legislation. Some people earlier talked about the need for this. I, too, support domestic partnership legislation. I would like to point out that without it, I think there are very clear inequities and injustices. For example, I'm a state employee. And as a state employee, one can get certain benefits for family members. But as a gay person, I cannot get such benefits for my partner. For example, in my recent statement from the employee department, they indicated that the people with families who are getting health insurance from the state where their family members are covered, the state is paying $4,064 of that. In the case of dental insurance, for which I would have to pay a little fee for dependents, but it also is subsidized by the state, $365.04. We have a tuition waiver available at Morehead State, either for myself or for a family member dependent. That means that a partner of mine could be eligible for up to $1,200 a year in credits. It depends on whether it would be graduate or undergraduate work, but at the graduate tuition rate, it would amount to $1,200 a year. So that comes to a total of $5,529.04. Now, even if you leave out the tuition credits, if you just take the health benefit part, it seems to me that if I, as a gay man with a partner, cannot cover my partner, that my heterosexual colleagues are really being reimbursed more by the state than I am. To the tune of at least $4,400 and possibly up to $5,529.04. So it seems to me that that has to change, and not having it represents unequal treatment, unequal compensation of people doing the same work. And that's it.
Thank you. Does Morehead State University have a statement in a professor's contract that he or she cannot be fired for sexual orientation?
Well, we have a general statement, which is part of our equal opportunity affirmative action policy, which indicates that Morehead State and the whole state university system is committed to non-discrimination on the basis of, and one of the categories that's listed is sexual preference.
Do you think that because that statement is in there, Morehead State University is capable of attracting faculty who otherwise may have gone to other institutions?
Yes, without a doubt. I've heard that from people. Mm-hmm. I've heard that from people who would like to come to a school like Morehead State. Mm-hmm. I've heard that from people who have been hired and who have taken some reassurance in that. For that reason, I happen to be a member of our Affirmative Action Committee at Morehead State, and I've been recommending that the full statement be on job announcements and so on, so that people receiving them do see that, mm-hmm. Rather than the short mm-hmm. statement. I think it definitely does make a difference.
Other questions?
I have a quick observation. This is not exactly a question. I'm struck by the story you told, Mark, about a member of the religious community from the Duluth area who told you rather candidly that you and other homosexuals should be executed. It seems to me that we have...
I might add that when he said that, people behind me in the audience were saying amen. Some people.
It would seem to me that we have reached a juncture around this issue where perhaps we should go back and reconsider the separation of church and state, where that kind of viewpoint has entrenched itself, I think, in our public policy for far too long.
Yes, exactly. I think quite often when people oppose gay supportive legislation, they give religious reasons, and it seems to me, given our Constitution, right at that moment, you're admitting that this cannot be a reason for having any law. That is, the moment you admit that you have certain religious principles that lead you to oppose something, that is a non-legislative kind of matter. But I think it hasn't worked that way in the way that we've functioned.
I guess I would argue that it's appropriate for people from the religious community to make their thoughts and feelings known in the public process. I think that what is necessary, however, in terms of public policy, is for those people to demonstrate that those beliefs have some bearing upon the matter of public policy, and I don't believe they've done that.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Barb, Sealer, or Siler? And while she's coming up, I would just like to mention for those people who may have come in after the break that if you wish to testify, you can come up here and sign in with Pierce on a blue form like this, and we will hear your testimony. If you would like not to testify publicly but would like to leave a written statement with us, we'll be happy to accept it. And if any people who have already testified have anything written for us, we'll be happy to take that too.
Madam Chair, I'd like to suggest that perhaps we set a cutoff time for sign-up since we already have a number of people yet to testify.
Yes, 3:45 will be the cutoff, and I was going to wait until that time in case somebody came in the next 5 minutes. Thank you.
My name is Barb Siler, and I am the Affirmative Action Officer at Morehead State. I just wanted to come today. I will be very brief, but I did want to come and make a brief statement that it should come to nobody's surprise that lesbians and gay men in our community and throughout the country and state are often victims of discrimination, harassment, and violent activities. I'm here today to assure the task force and any people attending these hearings that Morehead State University is committed to doing its part in protecting lesbians and gay men from any of those activities. However, we can't do it alone. And that's why the cooperation of everybody, including the city, the state, and federal officials and legislatures, is needed to effectively address the issues that we're talking about today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
Quick comment. I appreciate your brevity. I wish that there were many more people representing various institutions, including religious institutions, who would step forward and say the same thing to us. Thank you.
Statement. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Dorothy Finstead.
My name is Dorothy Finstead. I'm a resident of Fargo, North Dakota. Unlike Ms. Siler, I'm not going to be brief. I don't know how. I came back to Minnesota from various sojourns in the western part of the United States. I came back to Minnesota thinking Minnesota is such a liberal, far-sighted kind of state. It's going to be great. I'm going to be with people who will understand me, people who can see the future. Unfortunately, I was wrong. I find Minnesota still sadly lacking in much, much work that needs to be done in regard to human rights, specifically gay and lesbian rights. I agree with Janelle that we have a lot of internalized homophobia in this area. At the same time, I can't blame the homosexuals for that at all, because there's so much pressure in support of homophobia. In regard to the case at MSU where the woman is being harassed and threatened, I also know that I saw very little in the papers to even tell about it. Perhaps that was a wise thing to do, to not get the word out that you can't intimidate homosexuals. At the same time, the silence of the media, the silence of officialdom really bothers me. The silence of the community at large really bothers me. The silence of the homosexual community is shouting sometimes. It's that large. We're afraid to speak for a variety of reasons, very good reasons. But I also just returned from Washington, D.C., where I walked down the street smiling my face off because now and then I would walk into or come around women holding hands together, men holding hands together, and it was like I would move there if the crime rate wasn't quite so high. It can happen where people can feel a little more relaxed, a little more at ease, a little more proud of themselves, less fearful. But it's not happening here. I know only one woman in this area who even admits to the fact that she sat on the same side of the booth as her female lover, and she was pretty much heckled out of that restaurant. No one will stand up and say, "Stop heckling these women," not in this community. I don't know if that's cynical, negative, whatever. I've not seen it. I don't expect to see anyone stand up and say this is enough. I want to. I would do it. I don't see it. But at the same time, I wonder, would I really? I'm still scared. I live here for the time being. Another issue that has come up as I've sat here listening is whether or not teachers, officials, should have to be mandated to take some training in what it is to encounter homosexuals. I am a firm supporter of that. In my work as a battered women's advocate, I've trained many, many different populations. The police are a good population. I recall hearing a story once about a man who encountered in a mock-up kind of role-playing thing two lesbians in a domestic violence situation. By the time this man got his blinders off and realized what was going on, his instructor told him he would have been dead. His lesson from that lesson was not that there is domestic violence within the gay community. His lesson was that he'd better make sure that wherever he goes, he keeps his gun handy. No sensitivity. So add to your list of people who need to be trained, teachers, add policemen, add doctors, the doctor in the emergency room who says to a woman coming in, "What man beat you up like this?" And she sits there thinking, "How can I tell him it was my lover, my female lover?" Domestic violence hits there too. I know that I ramble. There's so much to say in 5 minutes. I don't know that I can necessarily do it. I know that in rural Minnesota, particularly northern Minnesota, we deal with many more people than just Minnesotans, particularly in Moorhead, Minnesota. We deal with all of North Dakota. They come to Moorhead like it's Mecca. And then from Moorhead, they go to Minneapolis, from Minneapolis to Denver, wherever they're off to. But they seem to do this progression. In the years that I've been here, I've seen that quite often. Minnesota can be a leader. It's been a leader in many kinds of things, domestic violence especially, which is near and dear to my heart, the cause. The legislation coming out of Minnesota is far-sighted. It's futuristic. It's wonderful. Other states look to Minnesota for a variety of ideas for role modeling. It's been said before, and Minnesota can do it. You can role model for North Dakota, which has nothing going for its citizens in this respect at all. Nothing. It's your job, it's our job as voters, as potential legislators, whoever we are, to legislate differently and to stand up strongly and say we're doing this because, as Janelle said, it's right and we want the rest of the country to do this too. We can be a very strong state. We already are a strong state in Minnesota. We need to keep that strength and to gather that strength and make it work for us and for everyone. Homosexuals are a minority, but they're no longer very silent. I'm glad to see that. Unfortunately, that wave hasn't hit Fargo-Moorhead. We don't even do a gay pride parade for whatever reasons. Whether it's apathy, I hate to think so, whether it's fear, whether it's lack of support, lack of money, simply lack of time or interest. I know the people are here, and we need to feel our pride. I feel my pride most of the time, except now and then when my very own lover tells me to take down the button off the visor of my car that says, "Please don't feed or tease the straight people," and apologizes because she's censoring me. And I'm just so angry because, yes, we're censoring ourselves. Questions?
Thank you. Any questions?
I have an observation. This touches on both your testimony and some prior testimony. We have heard in a number of ways about the migration from the upper Midwest through cities like Moorhead and Duluth down to the Twin Cities of gay and lesbian people and sometimes family members. We've heard testimony about the loss of those people to their own areas in terms of professional contribution and so on. It strikes me as I was listening to you that there is also an economic injustice that is involved in all of this, in that services that could and perhaps ought to be provided in areas like Moorhead become stacked up in the Twin Cities area when we have all these refugees that suddenly we have to provide programming for. And I don't mean that in a negative kind of way, but it does seem to me that it's time for the rest of the state to get on with supporting its gay and lesbian citizens.
Refugees is particularly appropriate, I think, because that's how a person feels. I've left the Red River Valley so many times, and I used to come back for some kind of a recollection of myself, my roots. It used to provide some strength for me because it's where I grew up. But it no longer does that. I do feel like a refugee, a child without a home. At the same time, I know that in my spiteful way, I'm not a saint, in my very spiteful way, as soon as I will leave a job that's been particularly oppressive, I make sure that everyone I ever hugged at that job knows they were hugged by a lesbian. I enjoy their faces a lot. And then I leave because it gets too hot. You know, hit and run. Thank you for your time.
Thank you
very much. At this time, I would like to...